Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Nice to see you all five of you. The House Special Committee on Fisheries will come to order. The time is 10:06. Members present are Representative Vance, Representative Tarr, Representative Kopp, Representative Christ-Tompkins, and myself, Chair Stutes. I will give you all the usual reminders to please silence your cell phones and not approach the committee desk. If you have any messages that you would like to pass, my committee aide, Matt Greening, would be more than happy to help you. I'd like to thank Jordan May, our committee secretary, and Nate Williams from the Juno LIO for technical and teleconferencing support. We have a quorum to conduct business, and today we have two items on the agenda. First, we have Marilyn Charles to the Fisherman Fund Advisory and Appeals Council, and secondly, we have John Wood to the Board of Fisheries. Before we go any further, I'd like to let you know the hearing of House Bill 247, Sport Fishing Enhancement Surcharge, has been postponed. We just received the CS last night and are working through a few potential issues with the language before it will be ready. We will look to hear this bill again as soon as possible and present the CS either Monday or Tuesday, depending on the committee members' availability. So up first, we will consider the appointment of Marilyn Charles to the Fisherman Fund Advisory and Appeals Council. Ms. Charles was first appointed on January 28, 2019, and her term expires March 1st of this year. If confirmed, her term would run through March 1st of 2025. Ms. Charles is joining us today online. Ms. Charles, we have your resume in front of us. I would like to, first of all, give you my true apology for the many times you have spent on hold and we've had to cancel the meetings. We appreciate your patience and your tolerance. So if you would identify yourself and your affiliation for the record and tell us a little bit about yourself and your interest in remaining on the appeals board.
Hi, good morning. My name is Marilyn Charles. I'm from Monarch, Alaska. I am an administrative assistant for Yukon River Towing, a construction company based out of Monarch. I became interested in this committee because that's what I do for our company. I had first started with insurance with Workman's Comp and P&I when I was working for QuickPack Fisheries. I started with QuickPack as a processor and worked my way up to HR management. And then one of my duties there was to fill out Workman's Comp claims and P&I claims. So I'm very familiar with the insurance part of the Fisherman's Fund, and it was easy to the committee. And so now that I'm working in the construction field, I also do the workman's comp and P&I claims for this company now. And I really enjoyed the diverse committee and to meet other people from around the state that are in the same field. So I'm just excited to know that I was chosen for reappointment.
Great. Well, we certainly appreciate your time as well. Are there any questions from this committee for Ms. Charles? Seeing none, with that I will open up public testimony. Let's see, I have no one online. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify for Ms. Charles? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony. excuse me. Ms. Charles, we certainly, again, appreciate you joining us today and want to, again, I want to apologize for all the time that you've spent holding, and we haven't had our meetings, but it's been a busy time of year this year down here in Juneau. We thank you for putting forward your name and your time, and we will pass your name forward.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Up next, we have the confirmation of John Wood to the Board of Fisheries. Mr. Wood was appointed in May on May 24th of 2019 and has served on the board since that time. If confirmed, his term would run until June 30th of 2021. Mr. Wood is joining us telephonically today. This is somewhat of a unique situation because Mr. Wood has served on the board since this past spring, and there is a track record to look at. I will certainly say that the board's track record these past few meetings has been very alarming to me and to a great number of Alaskans. With that, I would like to thank Mr. Wood for joining us, and I would like to offer my apologies to him for the numerous times and time spent waiting on hold. House Bill 199 took a lot longer than the committee anticipated. So it's just one of those things. As I said earlier, we've been pretty busy this year. If you would, Mr. Wood, identify yourself and your affiliation for the record. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience on the board and why you believe you're a good fit to remain on the board.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I actually benefited from sitting through one of those early meetings that we didn't get to my confirmation and could have added a few things to the discussion. I wish I'd been there. Anyway, I grew up in Louisiana where fishing is the second most popular activity, second only to our national championship football team. While going through LSU Law School, I worked for the Legislative Council, staffing committees and drafting legislation on the floor of the House, which was much more challenging than that of the Senate. That is where I got my first exposure to how an invasive species, in that case it was water hyacinth, could totally wipe out fishing habitat. Immediately after finishing law school in 1971, I moved to Alaska and settled in Anchorage, working for the Alaskan court system as court attorney, standing master, acting probate master for the Superior Court. Entered private practice in 1973 and practiced until the early 1990s. I reactivated my license for one brief time, and after that solely to help a young boy who was being manipulated by the system in a very sad situation where his mother was being tried and subsequently convicted of murder of a foster child in that home. I was elected to the Anchorage Assembly in 1980 and served three terms before being termed out in 1990. It was there that Assemblyman and later Senator Fred Dyson taught me a lesson that border fish actions do have an impact across the state and certainly did in Anchorage. He sponsored a resolution before the Assembly relating to a border fish matter, at which time I questioned him as to why this Assembly should get involved. After Fred finished with me, the Assembly unanimously agreed that it was indeed a subject which should be commented upon by the Assembly. In 1913, I accompanied then Senator Dunleavy to Juneau as staff and was assigned to get to the bottom of the fish wars in Cook Inlet and to advise him as to the best avenue to follow to result in fish returning to the natal streams in both numbers and size. The whole focus was on the fish, and that remains my focus to this day. In the summer of 2013, during that stint with Senator Dunleavy, I took it upon myself to travel down to the Kenai and actually visit some of the set net sites as well as two of the processes to hear their perspectives and learned a lot, to say the least. Later in that fall, I attended a Board of Fish workshop in Girdwood, where Roland Maugh, then executive director UC, came up and introduced himself. I'm sure that if you were to ask him, he still recalls that encounter, as it led to he, myself, and some of the Matsu folks sitting down, and what came out of that meeting was a signed agreement by all the parties as to some of the issues where they could find common ground, something that had never been done before. Dialogue was opened. This past summer, I was appointed to the Board of Fish, as you know. Again, I took it upon myself to actively seek out some of the stakeholders to learn their take on the upcoming Board of Fish meetings. On my nickel and my personal time, I drove down to Homer to observe the Salmon Subcommittee of the Council in action and ran into that same Roland Maugh, amongst others, who was introduced to a number of commercial fishermen. While there, I met over breakfast with several seine netters, as they walked me through their concerns, which was very helpful at the Lower Cook Inlet meeting that fall. While on the peninsula, I drove to Soldotna and Kenai and met individuals with East Side of set netters Chris Every, Gary Hollier, and Ken Coleman about their proposals pending before the Board of Fish, as well as their current legislative efforts to put in place a buyout program of permits and DNR leases. Their arguments were persuasive, and I spoke out strongly in favor and voted for their proposal that provided the backfill provisions, which is a key component of that buyout program. I'm sure that any of these gentlemen could verify this for you. On the same trip, I also met at UCEDA's office, where I was given my first opportunity to read their federal Ninth Circuit lawsuit, which, if successful, would have a dramatic impact on all the fisheries of Cook Inlet. The ramifications of that lawsuit should concern all interested in Cook Inlet fisheries. At the LCI meetings in Seward, the same issue of hatchery operations and cost recovery efforts became the centerpiece of several proposals that would have effectively crippled the ability of the hatcheries to continue operations. The record vote, as well as my express comments, are crystal clear that I vigorously oppose those efforts. I'm sure that if you were to speak with Dean Day, Executive Director of Cook Inlet Aquaculture, he could confirm this for you. During the UCI meetings, I made it a point to meet with anybody and everybody that asked in an effort to gain their perspective in a less structured meeting over breakfast, lunch, or dinner, where we could talk freely and could fully discuss their and my questions. Virtually everybody, regardless of their stance, agreed that this past UCI meeting was much more civil and less confrontational than any in recent memory. I attribute much of that to encouragement given to the stakeholders to work out solutions among themselves rather than stonewalling and hoping for the best from the board. I met with several of these groups individually and even went to the point of calling several over to the table together to get that dialogue started. It worked, just like it had in Girdwood several years earlier, and as a result, the guides, CRISA, and many Eastside Setnetters were able to come to an agreement that all signed off on and were adopted by the board. Let that sink in for a moment for those of you who are familiar with UCI meetings in the past. CRISA and Eastside have sat down and actually came to an agreement. Additionally, the Northside Setnetters and the Matsu Commission also negotiated and reached agreement, which was presented to and approved by the board. Again, two groups that had never sat down before and even talked, much less come to an agreement. I believe that I was consistent in my actions during the board cycle and that my efforts to bring parties together were successful beyond expectation. There were proposals, such as the nuisance in the PU fishery, which is incidentally in my backyard, that I spoke out and voted against because it was not consistent. It was not an easy decision, but it was the right decision. I have no regrets. In closing, I have the ability to bring parties together, the training to objectively make decisions between conflicting users, and the legal experience to understand the consequences of pending lawsuits and international agreements. I welcome an opportunity to continue serving on the board, and will try to respond to any questions you may have. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from this committee? Well, I have a couple questions. Mr. Wood, I've reviewed the minutes of the 2019 Matsu Fish and Wildlife Commission, of which you are a board member. They're quite telling, and to start with, I would encourage the public to read the March, April, May, September, October, and December minutes of those meetings. And so in relation to those meetings, I have a couple of questions. Do you believe that there is a conflict in being a board member of the Matsu Fish and Wildlife Commission, developing strategies and proposals, and then voting on those same proposals as a commissioner on the Board of Fish?
Well, first of all, I resigned the very day that I was appointed to the Board of Fish, and that was in May. So minutes of any meetings past May, I can't comment on. I wasn't there and participating. But is there a conflict if I were to continue on the board? There's no financial conflict, no. I didn't think it appropriate, and that's the reason I resigned from that particular advisory commission once the appointment was made, and it was immediate, like the same day. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but that's how, my position on it.
Well, not really, Mr. Wood, because I have the minutes in front of me, and I have December 19th, 2019 minutes in front of me of the board meeting of which you attended.
I attended but could not participate. I was not a member. I attend a lot of meetings just like I attended the council meeting down in Homer.
Well, you did participate. I have the minutes in front of me. So, I mean, that's of a great concern to me.
I asked a question of a person who was there present. I believe it was a commissioner. If you call that participation, then yes, I participated. Was I able to actually vote or do anything of that nature? No.
Were you, during your comments, were you involved in creating a strategy for the Board of Fish meeting that was going to take place in Kodiak?
Strategy? No. Like every board meeting, but more so actually towards the UCI meeting, I encourage participation by those members to come out there and let their position be known.
I'm looking at my notes here, Mr. Wood. I'm sorry for the pause here. It appears to me that as a board member on April 4th, you were reviewing management plans and talking about being stepped up to the Board of Fish, and you were concerned about the Mat-Su situation as a Board of Fish member. I
wasn't appointed till May, Madam Chairman.
I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that. Would you consider it a conflict to have participated in motions made that were going to be presented to the Board of Fish and then turn around and vote on those same motions?
It would not be a conflict of title, 39, that puts forward the conflict of interest. And I disclosed my membership, prior membership on the Board of Fish at the time of the Board of Fish meetings.
I was only at the Kodiak and Anchorage one, so I wasn't a participant in that. But I was at the Kodiak meeting.
Before I make my final comments,
I will. Do we have any other questions? Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Wood, you noted that before your appointment to the Board of Fish, you worked with now Governor Dunleavy in assessing Upper Cook Inlet salmon stock questions, and you mentioned both abundance and size. And I'm curious, what is your perspective or assumptions or working hypotheses why the size of salmon is decreasing, specifically in the Upper Cook Inlet, but in general?
Yeah, and I don't think you can restrict it to Upper Cook Inlet, as I have concluded after looking at it for a long time. There's something taking place not only here, but elsewhere throughout the state, that the size of king, as well as several other species, has gone down over the years. And to what that's directly attributable, I wish I could tell you, but I suspect that a lot of it has to do with occurring in the blue waters, which we have very little control over. And what needs to be done here, I think is where you're driving, is perhaps stopping as much as possible pressure on interception of the big kings, particularly in the river system.
Follow up.
Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Wood, recognizing that what's happening in the blue water is not within BOF jurisdiction, but that you are clearly personally interested in it and have attended council meetings, what's your impression of what is likely, in your view, given available information, likely to be a driver of this phenomenon of decreased size of our salmon?
I suspect, and I speaking with the researcher at NOAA on this very subject, that a lot of it has to do with environmental concerns, whether that be the blob that's occurred out there or whether that be some loss of a feeding or something of that nature. But water temperature seems to be driving some of it for certain. Habitat, and as far as feed, seems to be another factor that's driving it. They have a project going on right now, and a national project, I think, is going to add a lot of data to what we have, which is not a whole lot. And I would encourage us to get ourselves, meaning the state, participating in that effort.
Thank you. Follow up?
Follow up, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has the Board of Fish engaged itself from sort of an advocacy perspective or sort of a stewardship of Alaska stocks perspective at all on issues of bycatch in the blue water and federal fisheries, federally managed fisheries?
No, we have not. I've only been on it for this year, so I can't speak beyond that. During my tenure, no, that has not occurred. And I don't know what avenue would be available for the board to do that, other than as a advisory body, perhaps by resolution, suggesting that that research be done. But there is clearly an issue out there, and who has the jurisdiction, I guess, is the only question.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to go back to the recent Board of Fish decisions related to the new personal use fishery. And one thing, when you were going through, you know, your resume and list of things, of course, have a long career in with your legal background, but not any in biology. And I'm concerned here, as it's reported, about that decision. It says the creation of the fishery comes on the heels of a board decision to delist Susitna River sockeye salmon as a stock of concern, though Department of Fish and Game biologists were neutral about the proposal.
Which proposal? BU or the stock of concern?
Well, I'm not sure the way it's reported if it which of those things. And so I guess I'm just wondering if you can comment on that, because it just you know, it appears these decisions are becoming more and more political and moving farther away from the science.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that, because the stock of concern was advocated by the department itself. That's why I asked for clarification. And I spoke initially in that I was not comfortable with that, because we being the state, we had just barely reached the minimal threshold to have such a stock of concern removed. While you've got a stock of concern designation on that species, you have an action plan that requires certain actions be taken. When you remove it, you no longer have that action. There was discussion. I told them I was initially going to be voting against removing that. The department spoke up and said they had like concerns, and they were going to be monitoring and continuing with their restricted or conservative approach. So I reluctantly agreed to go along, and the PU came up, and that's the very reason that I voted against the PU. That and some earlier steps have been taken to pass sockeye into the rivers, and then what we were being asked to do is create a PU fishery that was targeting not only some other species, but sockeye. So I put in an amendment that failed to have sockeyes also excluded from that PU fishery, and that failed. And as a result of all of those factors, I voted against the PU being established, even though it was in my backyard.
Thank you.
Representative Kopp.
Yeah, thank you, John. Chuck Kopp here. Just a question just about priorities. So for, can you tell me what your view is for priority of fisheries management, I guess, looking at Lower Cook Inlet and then moving up to Upper Cook Inlet, how that priority could change, you know, when we look at sport fish, com fish, personal use, subsistence, and just tell me as a board member how you see the priority as you move up and down the inlet. Thank you.
Certainly. Number one priority, wherever it may be, Upper Cook Inlet, Lower Cook Inlet, Kodiak, wherever, is enhancing getting fish into the rivers back to the natal breeding grounds so that we can build the stocks in the future, both numbers and size. And that remains constant throughout any decision I make. As you're going from that point of breeding back through that system you just described, it's only when you have a clear abundance that I would go into the next order of priorities, and I think that's what your questioning is aimed at. And to me, number one would be subsistence. Number two would be an allocation that would assure all participants throughout the region, whether that be drift netters, set netters, PU fisheries, seine net, that they would be able to participate with a good chance of being successful at harvesting. And then third of all is to make sure that stocks in jeopardy, and I should say it's second because it would come before the allocation question with me, so that stocks of concern are not jeopardized anywhere in the system, whether that be in Kodiak or whether that be in the Cook Inlets, et cetera. So if you have a stock of concern designation, I would be super careful not to be harvesting those to the point where you drive them to basically extinction.
Just follow up,
does that answer your question, Chuck?
Yes. Yeah, John. Thank you. John, just follow-up question. How would you respond to the critiques of former lead biologists, you know, with Fish and Game that say that the Board of Fish has promoted over-escapement to the detriment of fisheries and the river systems themselves, that we have been getting too many fish? You know, I appreciate you saying you want to, you know, pursue enhanced fish returns, but I'd like you to just comment on the over-escapement criticism from former lead area biologists with Fish and Game that are on the record.
Yes, over-escapement is an issue, no question of it. But at the same time, when you're dealing with, at least particularly in Cook Inlet, when you're dealing with those same fish that are constituting the over-escapement, mixed therein, as you well know, are fish that are coming from stocks that are in real serious trouble. So you've got to be able to do the harvesting selectively, as to the extent possible, to avoid hitting those jeopardized stocks. Do I want to see the fish that are in excess of the abundance harvested? Yes. But you got to formulate it in such a manner not to, to damage other stocks.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Wood, could you comment on your general outlook on the matter of enhancement and the interaction between hatchery stocks and wild stocks?
Okay, you want me to restrict it to the enhancement as deals with hatcheries or as enhancement overall?
I might be missing something, but what kind of enhancement would enhancement overall, though I'm not immediately sure what kind of enhancement we'd be talking about outside hatcheries.
Yeah, interesting question, because when I was listening in on the hearing that I didn't get the chance to jump in and participate, they were talking about a program that I do have some familiarity with, and it's a native practice down in the Pacific Northwest called misting. And it enhances stock right in their natal streams, buries them in the gravel and processes it there so that they don't have the problems with predator avoidance and everything else that inherent with the hatchery type of approach. And I think that the state would benefit by exploring that further and trying some pilot programs that would see how effective it is up here in Alaska. And I suspect it'd be highly effective. And it would be a program I think I would embrace at least. Going to hatcheries itself, there was a focused effort at the Lower Cook Inlet meeting to really attack the underbelly of the hatcheries, and I resisted that entirely. Hatcheries have a valid place. The legislature has acted in 1979. The intent is clear that they were establishing these hatcheries, among other reasons, to create an economic engine, and it's been successful in my opinion. Every vote I've taken, and I suggest you talk to aquaculture people, et cetera, every vote I've taken, every comment I've made would reflect just what I told you.
Thank you. Follow up?
Yeah.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the answer, Mr. Wood. That's helpful. And then on another subject, I'm specifically thinking about Upper Cook Inlet stocks and stocks of concern. In your experience looking at examining those issues of returns to the Mat-Su, returns to the Upper Cook Inlet, you've mentioned intercept as a concern. To what extent have you identified other factors that, in your estimation, may be responsible for diminished return in the Matsu and Upper Cook Inlet?
Oh, yeah. Thank you for the question, because I didn't mean to insinuate intercept was the only concern. Far from it. We have some issues with Elodia. We have issues with the pike problem up here. I don't know that they're totally solvable. We have problems with culverts, which are being addressed on the Kenai as well as up here on the valley. In addition to that, I think you've got some real issues with some practices in the past where, for instance, within the Inn River, where they were focusing a fishery, not a fishery because that's a technical term, but they were fishing right on top of the breeding grounds. And that should not be allowed, in my opinion. In other words, where the fish were aggregating in a particular spot, right at the mouth of the stream, and they were getting hammered, that just doesn't make sense to me. And yet, it contributed to what you described. And then some of the issues are that they focused on intercepting, and this interception takes place in river or in the inlet, but they were taking precedent over getting the large fish, which is what you really want to continue your breeding.
Thank you. Mr. Wood, if the board adopts a proposal and it's later determined that one or more of the board members had a conflict of interest, what should the board do to remedy the perception that the board did not conduct a fair and transparent deliberation on the proposal?
Okay, I'm not sure I heard the first part of your question. If it's subsequently determined what, would you repeat that?
If a board adopts a proposal and it is later determined that one or more board members had a conflict of interest, what should the board do to remedy the perception that it was not a clear and transparent process?
Really have not thought that question through. My initial reaction was, just like with open meetings law, they should go back and reconsider the proposal. But I haven't thought it through enough, Madam Chair, to say that would be my final answer, but that's what initially comes to my mind.
Okay, thank you. And I'm just going to go back to the Matsu Wildlife meeting in December. Did you, Mr. Wood, participate at all in any of the proposals that were created for the Board of Fish meeting that took place in January?
Not that I recall. I think I even left the meeting after the commissioner himself left. Not to answer your question, not that I recall.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions? Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is your interpretation of maximum sustained yield?
It is the mathematical point at which you are getting your return replacing themselves so that you're not diminishing the stock.
Thank you for that. I have been hearing that you are one who does your homework, and I saw you in Homer at the Halibut Commission, and appreciate you taking the time to talk to fishermen. I was concerned that you neglected to connect with the people who would be voting to confirm you. I was wondering how many legislators have you spoken to directly in this course of the year awaiting your confirmation?
I've not spoken to one concerning my confirmation. In fact, I have not spoken to many legislators at all, and I did that purposely, and I don't feel that I should be lobbying the legislators themselves, that if they have questions, I'd be more than happy, like we are now, to respond. But I would change my mind and come down there and visit with you folks if you thought it was something that would be beneficial to your coming to your decision. I let me just give you a little bit of an example. I was down there when several appointments went through, and some of the members that wanted to be members, I should say, some of the appointees really thrust themselves upon the legislators and I was not going to do that.
I understand the concern. In a lot of the rumors that have been bouncing around, I'm just going to be frank with you. I want to confirm if what I've heard is true, is that you have made comments that your number one goal was to get fish up in the valley. Is this true?
Up in the rivers. Yes, that is true. I don't care whether the river's in the valley or river's in the Kenai or river's in Kodiak, but that would be true.
How does that support maximum sustained yield for the entire fishery?
If you get the numbers up in the rivers and breeding, and you try and minimize or eliminate some of the predators, et cetera, that are currently keeping numbers down, you're going to be able to reach that figure very quickly, very easily. Whereas right now, if you don't get the fish up there, you're going to be fighting a continuous battle at the minimal levels. It takes a combination of things. There's no just one simple answer. I wish there were.
Thank you for that.
It's not a rumor. I strongly support getting the fish up into the river for breeding purposes. And I'm not bashful about that.
There seems to be a bias towards one area of the inlet, and while I admire the fact that you do your homework and you've stood out among other board members for taking the time to get to know fishermen and the issues, which garners great respect, I can't ignore that there appears to be a bias, because what I'm looking for in my district is someone who can do no harm. And while my district is the Lower Kenai Peninsula, I have fishermen who fish all over Alaska, and have to have a fine balance between the commercial sport, personal and subsistence use fisheries. And I will be looking at all of your decisions and this bias with great care, because we need board members who are looking out for the fishery and all the users. And that's what I encourage you to continue to do as a sitting board member.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Other questions? Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Wood, from your perspective, would you say that there is balance on the Board of Fish right now between sports fish and commercial fish?
Good question, because I don't classify myself as any, and I'm trying to think. Godfrey, commercial fish. Carlson Van Dart, commercially fished. Jensen and Johnson, both commercially fish. Mariski, sports fish. And Peyton, subsistence primarily, but he's done a little commercial and does sport as well. So that's my take on each of the members, if that helps you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Seeing none, we will go to public testimony. And with the public testimony, I'm going to ask that you limit your testimony to 3 minutes due to the lack of testifiers. So with that, I will open public testimony. Is there anyone here that would like to testify? If so, if you'd come forward, put your name and affiliation on the record. Seeing no one in the room to testify, we will go online. We'll first go to Wes Humbird in Homer. Mr. Humbird?
Hello, this is Wes Humbird. Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been a fisherman in Cook Inlet since 1966. I moved to Homer in 1971 because I could see the salmon fishery here was what I wanted to do, because it was my livelihood. I have met with Mr. Woods at the Salmon Committee meeting in Homer, and he asked a lot of questions, which I'd like to admit that that was pretty nice, but after he asked you a question, he doesn't seem to follow the suit he's talking about. He didn't even know where the EEZ was in federal waters. It would come time for him to vote at the Board of Fish meetings. The Board of Fish did something against the federal law. They moved us out of federal waters, which is mandated by the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, which was against the law. And these guys on the board don't stop and realize that commercial fishing is one of the best renewable resources in the state. And I feel like Mr. Woods listens, but when it comes time to vote, he votes along with the Kenai River Sportfish Association. And I would hope that we'd not confirm him to be on the board again. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Humbert. Next, go to Nancy Hillstrand.
Yes, hello. My name is Nancy Hillstrand, and I'm owner and operator of Pioneer Alaskan Fisheries. I'm now a seafood processor that has clients that are both commercial and sport and personal use, so I have no affiliation with any of those. I have no allocation issues, in other words. After 45 years in the fishing industry and now as a processor, I realize that it's important that we have people on the board that are thoughtful and are willing to face these tough questions we have. We've lost species, and it has to do with our fish and game and our Board of Fisheries. So I fully think that we should confirm John Wood. He votes against a lot of the things I believe in, but I believe that he's a very thoughtful and persistent person because he asks a lot of questions at the board meetings. I've attended a lot of board meetings since 1982, and so I've seen the different board members. Some of them are silent. Some of them are, you know, don't really care. Some of them are very, very allocative. You know, they have one side or the other that they stand on. But what I see with John Wood in his performance is that he is extremely thoughtful and trying to learn and make sure that he gets the answers, and we all learn from him asking those questions. So we need a board member who can see all sides and make these hard decisions to ensure that our fish are sustainable. Because right now we are losing species, and we need to have someone in there that will take care of the fish, and I think that John Wood would do this for us. So please confirm John Wood. I feel that his half a century of experience in Alaska is needed on our Board of Fisheries. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Are there questions? Seeing none, we will go to John McCombs.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is John McCombs, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I would tell you that I have been attending the Board of Fish meeting for 34 years. Regarding the confirmation of John Wood, for one, the composition of the board is lopsided with two guys from the valley. Wood voted for a dipnet fishery where there are no fish, closed areas where fish are plentiful, and voted for hook and release where Kenai kings spawn and raised escapement in the Kenai River. Mr. Wood came to the board with prejudice, bias, and a personal agenda. Mr. Wood voted at a recent Upper Cook Inlet meeting before he was confirmed. I have to wonder what kind of protocol or process is that. Do not vote for a prejudiced politician. Vote for fish. Do not confirm John Wood. There were no agreements with Wood when I was at the meeting. He was untruthful. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We have a question from Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. McCombs, you were saying that you've been attending the Board of Fish meeting for 34 years, and I was thinking that it seems it's a little bit unfortunate that the appointment happened in May so that a person prior to being confirmed had the opportunity to participate in some really important decisions. And in your 34 years of experience, you know, how unusual is that?
That's unusual. Let's back up a minute and talk about process and protocol. Let's talk about Chairman Mariski, who was found guilty of violating the Open Meetings Act, and he was still allowed to chair the entire Cook Inlet meeting. You know, I find a lot of things that went on at the board meeting. For example, the commissioner put a muzzle on the fish and game guys when we were there. And do you realize that when we went to the Board of Fish meeting, and this is something I do every Board of Fish meeting I go to, as I count how many state employees are there. do you understand that there were 50 state employees there, and they were all there to make rules so I couldn't go fishing? And that's just disgusting and shameful.
Other questions? Seeing none, Mr. McComb, thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Gary Hollier in Kenai.
Yes, Madam Chairman, my name is Gary Hollier, 66-year lifelong resident from Kenai. I've been involved as Mr. McCombs for the first Board of Fish meeting I made for Upper Cook Inlet was 1986. Been there every year, every meeting at an expense. Three Board of Fish members have come to my fish sites. I'm an East Side set netter. Tom Kluberton, Robert Ruffner, and John Woods last September. Mr. Woods asked very articulate questions to get educated on our fishery. At the Board of Fish, he made himself available many hours of the day. Did I agree with all his decisions? No. But from a stakeholder that has seen multitudes of Board of Fish members that come with a bias, that don't come with a bias, that try to do a good job, I think Mr. Woods did a fair job for his first Upper Cook Inlet meeting, and I would vote that you would pass Mr. Woods' name on for confirmation. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll go to Mike Wood.
Hello, this is Mike Wood. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you just fine. If you'd identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you. It's Mike Wood. I'm calling remotely, so hopefully my phone doesn't cut out. I'm calling on behalf of myself as a Northern District set netter, but full disclosure, I'm also the chair of the Mat-Su Fish and Wildlife Commission. But that aside, I want to say my priority in life is the health of this river, in particular the Susitna River and its habitat. And I've known John for over 10 years. And I know that coming from this area, he's as familiar with this Upper Susitna area as I am, and he's always asked very good questions about the health of this river and the fish returning to it and into the Mat-Su and all of Cook Inlet streams. And I think it's unusual that you actually have a person that looks inland to the habitat and not just in the waters and catching and allocation. I really appreciate that. I can attest for a fact, pulling together the Northern District set netters who I've never wanted to talk with the Mat-Su Fish and Wildlife Commission, and he was instrumental in that and with us coming up with an agreement. So I very much respect John over the last 10 years working with him up here in this area, and I really hope that you vote to confirm John Wood. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Seeing none, we will go to Ray in Soldotna from the Kenai River Professional Guide Association. I didn't want to massacre your last name, Ray.
Madam Chair, thank you for the time to speak today. My name is Ray DeBartolabin, and the House Fisheries, thanks for your time to speak today. I'm the current president of the Kenai River Professional Guide Association. I am here to testify and support the confirmation of Mr. Woods. I represent hundreds of sport fishermen and guides on the Kenai Peninsula. I wrote this letter 2 weeks ago to testify here, so it says, last week I attended the Board of Fish meetings every day in Upper Cook Inlet meetings. I spent 8, 9, 10 hours a day there, and sometimes I spent with Mr. Woods. During these 2 weeks, Mr. Woods made himself available to all user groups, commercial, sport, and personal use, just like he said in testimony. I was part of the team that got together on the sidelines and met with commercial fishermen and had lunch with commercial fishermen. This was put together by not only him, but also other board members that did this. I truly support Mr. Woods, and he's an upstanding citizen and did a great job for the Board of Fish and will continue to do so. Other than the fact that his LSU Tigers beat my beloved Clemson Tigers, I see no reason for him not to be confirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions? Seeing none, we will go to Ben Moore from the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association.
Hi, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ben Moore. I'm the Executive Director with the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. We're a 501c3 charitable nonprofit organization dedicated to ensuring the sustainability of the world's premier sport fishing region, Alaska. KRSA would like to register our full support for the confirmation of John Wood to the Board of Fisheries. Mr. Wood's professional training as a lawyer gave him a remarkable ability to take up an idea or a proposal or a perceived conflict and evaluate it objectively from all angles. This capacity has proven important in his work on the board, where his analysis of a situation has led to collaboration between user groups who have historically been in conflict. And the results have been decisions which responsibly guide management of the fisheries of the state. Mr. Wood has demonstrated an understanding that service on the Board of Fisheries is a public trust responsibility and that his decisions are answerable to all Alaskans. He's thorough in his research and questioning and has taken his responsibility incredibly seriously. I can attest to what Mr. Wood said earlier, the testimony that he offered about working with multiple stakeholder groups. And I'd like to emphasize that one of Mr. Wood's most significant character traits is his desire for equity and inclusiveness. At the recent Upper Cook Inlet board meeting, it was common to see multiple stakeholders promoting proposals or amendments that were before the board, and Mr. Wood proved to be accessible to the public. He circulated amongst all members of the public during breaks. Mr. Wood's hallmark during this time was to encourage stakeholders to work together. One would regularly hear Mr. Wood ask stakeholders if they've talked to the other affected parties and if they've been able to reach some sort of an agreement. He constantly encouraged collaboration across sectors in order to reach the ultimate goal of the Board of Fisheries, which is to conserve and develop the fishery resources of our state. Kenai River Sport Fishing Association applauds Mr. Wood's willingness to serve Alaska on the Board of Fisheries, and we encourage a positive confirmation vote, both by this committee moving his name forward and by the legislature as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions? I have a question for you, Mr. Moore. Did Mr. Wood help you in authoring the Upper Cook Inlet roadmap for the meeting?
Well, I spoke to a number of different stakeholders about what a proposed roadmap would look like. The proposal that I moved, that I submitted, that has my name on it, was not the formal or was not the final proposal that was adopted by the board.
Was Mr. Wood involved in the creation of it? This is a yes or a no question, Mr. Moore.
I'm having trouble recalling. I believe I spoke to, yeah, I did speak to Mr. Wood about, you know, about what my proposal would look like. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Are there other questions? Seeing none, we will move on to Forrest Braden, Southeast Alaska Guides Association in Ketchikan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Forrest Braden, Southeast Alaska Guides Organization, and we'd like to show our support for the confirmation of Mr. Wood today. And so I'm the Executive Director of Southeast Alaska Guides Organization, or SEGO, and I was sent or asked to go and wanted to go to a couple of the meetings this cycle. I went to the Lower Cook Inlet meeting, the Upper Cook Inlet meeting. Primarily, we didn't have any issues on the agenda, but primarily just to watch the board, to look at how people you know, moved and interacted with the public, with each other, how they voted. And so I was an observer, and so all I can give is my observation of watching Mr. Wood in two meetings. And so I'm the type of person that wants to see what's right, wants to see equity. I don't want to see bias. We represent sport fishing people, but in my estimation, Mr. Wood he's a man without pretense. I think that comes across as he's giving his own public testimony. You see that on the board. you just look at him and you say, you know, that's a guy that wants to get at the root of the problem. I watched him, like, dig information out of both people testifying and out of department staff just to kind of just really feather out what it is that he needed to know to make a clear decision. I really didn't see any, like, track record, you know, biases in the decisions that he made at those meetings. It seemed to me that he was very equitable. And I even saw him flip-flop. He started out with one course of action and one proposal, and then he got some new information and changed his mind. He wasn't embarrassed about it. He seems like he makes his decisions based on principle. I found him to be approachable. I didn't really have a real one-on-one conversation with him, but I saw him mingle. I coincidentally sat next to him in a restaurant while he was talking to, I think it was a drift netter, which, you know, gives credibility to what he said earlier in his testimony, that he does approach all user groups. And I really think that he's trying to dig at what's right and do what's fair. And we need that in the Board of Fisheries. The bias one way or another is really a bad thing in the end. I think we all need to work together, all gear groups, to, you know, to make a living and to make everything work for everybody. And I perceive him as a person to do that. So we recommend that you forward his name on for confirmation, and we hope to work with him in the future and see him on the board. So, thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Braden. Next, we will go to Chuck Derrick.
Chairman Stutes and committee members, my name is Chuck Derrick. I'm president of the Chitna Dip Netters Association, voice of the thousands of Alaska residents who dip net salmon in the Chitna personal use dip net fishery on the Copper River. We're in support of the confirmation of John Wood to the Board of Fisheries. As far as our fishery on the Copper River, we feel Mr. Wood understands the high value of consumptive uses of Alaska fisheries by the residents of the state of Alaska. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from this board? Thank you. So do the committee members have any questions or final comments? Well, imagine this, but I do. And I'll be blunt. I have some serious issue with the board's behavior in both the Kodiak and Cook Inlet meetings, which Mr. Wood has been a part of. The entire commercial sector is under attack, and people are rightfully concerned that the board is not following the public process, not listening to all user groups, and is prioritizing one user group over all others. In regard to the nomination of Mr. Wood, I will preface my following remarks with the statement that there is nothing personal intended in what I'm about to say. I have been chair of the fisheries for the past 6 years, and I represent a fishing district, and I deeply care about an honest, transparent, and fair Board of Fisheries process. It's from that lens and that of a concerned Alaskan that I make the following statements. In the minutes I referenced earlier, it's clear to me at least there was a perceived outcome for the Kodiak and Cook Inlet meetings. Further, the back and forth between the Wildlife Commission, Mr. Wood, and the Commissioner of Fish and Game paint a pretty clear picture of a blatant bias for one region and one user group taking priority over the public process. Based on his actions so far on the board, Mr. Wood seems to have carried forward that bias to his Board of Fish seat. The Board of Fish process is meant to be one of the most public and transparent processes we have. I've personally attended both Kodiak and Cook Inlet meetings. What is happening on the board right now is something all Alaskans should mourn, regardless of whether you're a commercial, sport, subsistence, or personal use fisherman. As chair of the committee, I do not have the option to hold this confirmation in committee, but I can say with certainty on the floor I will be voting for the public process and against the confirmation of Mr. Wood. I was appalled at the Kodiak Board of Fish meeting, and as we all know, the Cook Inlet meetings that I attended in Anchorage is usually standing room only. And when I talked to several of the few people that were there, there was about maybe 30 people there, 40 people. I asked them, where is everyone? Why aren't they here? And the response I got uniformly was, we all know the decision's already been made. before this meeting happened. And that's a pretty sad statement. Doesn't matter what sector of fish or fishing you're in. When you have some, when the public process is so skewed, changes need to be made. So, with that, the House Special Committee on Fisheries has reviewed the qualification of the governor's appointees, Marilyn Charles to the Fisherman's Fund Advisory and Appeals Council, and John Wood to the Board of Fish, and recommends that the names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This does not reflect intent by any member to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation. Do we have anything else to come before this board?
Madam Chair, I was just going to say it's a little bit unfortunate the way this particular nomination is playing out, because a lot of the testimony today was sort of in favor based on what people have seen over these last couple of meetings. But, you know, the individual and any person would have probably behaved like this, but just knew that they probably knew, Mr. Wood probably knew that people would be paying close attention to what happened over this period prior to confirmation. So it just sort of feels like it has undue influence about in the way that this is playing out. And so then, you know, you're not sort of going off of just the person is being evaluated in a different way relative to my experience with these board appointments, because, you know, generally we're considering them before they've attended meetings and been involved in some pretty significant decisions. And I guess for me, the most disappointing thing is that in some of the testimony, you can hear sort of the, you know, user group conflict and we're just never likely to be successful if that's the way we're gonna operate, particularly when some of our fisheries may be impacted by things that are happening beyond Alaska waters and influences, you know, external factors that we're not really a part of. And so then, you know, having the user conflict makes it even that much more disappointing, because we really need to be working together to understand what's happening. So I'll just add those comments at this time, and those are just some of the thoughts on my mind of how the process might have worked better. And it's just, yeah, unfortunate no matter what happens, even if this person isn't confirmed, they still had the ability to participate in really big decisions that will have lasting impacts. So
thank you, Representative Tarr. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Along those lines, it is difficult to, it would be easy to make that assumption that this particular appointee is getting swept into the current affairs. But he does have a track record of writing proposals that directly impact the Cook Inlet prior to appointment. So he does have a history for us to look at even before current activity on the board that is challenging when we need to consider the fishery as a whole. And that's something that has been brought up as great concern. And then the recent actions on the board confirms the concerns of members of the intentions that appear to have a bias toward the Matsu Valley specifically. And that's concerning to me, because I want someone who's looking out for the fishery as a whole, looking out for the resource and all users. And I do admire the fact that he is learning and doing homework, and that is obviously not a common trait amongst all board members, as we would hope it would be, but it does speak to the broken process that I would like to address through legislation, that there's this loophole that an appointee is not yet confirmed and is able to be on the board for practically an entire year and make decisions that affect the people's resource. Where else do we allow such leniency and accountability when technically has not been given the authority of the legislature? That itself is concerning to me, and I don't want John Wood to be swept up in the process that we need to address as a body. So I'm going to be weighing heavily on what the right thing to do concerning John Wood's appointment, because This is not an easy thing because he is appearing to be a good board member in connecting with people. And I'm hoping that a lot of the rumors and a lot of the concerns he's able to counter by helping with a better public process. So thank you for the time, Chairman Stutz, to be able to kind of talk this out, you know, because this is one of the greater impacts to our economy, to sustaining life, you know, is our fishery. And I know that that's something that we all take very seriously in this room. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Vance. And I would be delighted to work with you on that legislation to close that loophole. Do we have other comments? Seeing none, I will adjourn this meeting at 11:12 on Thursday, March 12th.